How am I sounding now?
Much better.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. So repeat the first question.
All right. How did the Catholic worker, which, as you described it, seems to have been focused primarily on helping the poor and the hungry, how did that become also identified with an anti-war movement?
Okay, stop.
Good.
And let me respond.
Sure.
Okay. Let's see. Very early on, the Catholic worker became a very phenomenal movement within the church. And within a year of its founding, there were probably about 12 other houses, or maybe a handful of other houses. But the paper had expanded to about 50,000 subscribers within the first 3 years of the. And this was because in 1933, as you know, the whole the economy and had collapsed
Great
in the United
Depression.
States. Exactly. And so people were kind of casting, and I think Catholics were kind of casting around trying to figure out, well, what do we do? And so even as as radical as Dorothy and Peter's kind of program of farming communes and houses of hospitality sounded, it had an appeal. And so it was subscribed to in bulk by various, a number of parishes and schools and colleges. And so Dorothy became quite a phenomenon early on. But what happened was that very quickly, she lost favor with many, many in the Catholic Church over the issue of the Spanish Civil War. And as you know, Dorothy probably would have, she would have, she probably was torn, but on the whole, she understood what fascism was. I mean, she was torn because priests and nuns were being killed,
Right.
but she also understood who the fascists were, and she also understood who the Republican government was, and that this was, a coup. And she probably had plenty of friends in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade that went off to fight fascism, and she certainly supported that in her heart, I know. And so, but her public stand, and actually her personal stand, was that she believed in pacifism. And so she spoke out against the war, and she spoke out against the church's support of the war, and she spoke out for pacifism. Now, she got her pacifism, I'm sure, from the Gospels, but she had it even before she heard the Gospels. She got it in the anti-World War I movement and brought it directly into the Catholic worker movement, where I'm sure she grounded it pretty quickly in the Gospels, because it's not that hard to do,
Right.
So she paid an early price for her pacifism, and then and throughout the pre-war years, Catholic workers were among the few that were down at the docks protesting against the treatment of Jews, calling for the opening of our borders so that Jewish people could come into the United States. So Dorothy always had this political component, obviously early on working for the unions and pro-union justice movements in the United States, but clearly early on taking a stand against the war in Spain, and then ultimately when the Catholic work when World War II came to the United States, the Catholic worker Dorothy paid an even heavier price by it's, she refused to abandon her pacifism, even though, as you can imagine, many, many Catholic workers were politically active in the anti-fascist movement and felt very strongly that we should go and fight Hitler. So Dorothy not only lost over half of her subscribers, the paper went down from 75,000 to about 35,000, but she closed about half the houses closed, and many of them were closed by Dorothy, who said, "If you're not a pacifist, you can't be a Catholic worker." So there was a great deal of rancor around that issue, and Dorothy paid a terrible price for it. So
Okay,
that's about it.
yeah, that's good. Now let's tell us about what the Plowshares movement is. You've been to jail for for protesting war, but you say you've never actually done a plowshares action. So tell us what plowshares movement and plowshares action is.
Yeah. Well, let's see. The plowshares movement was founded in the 80s, I believe, by Phil Berrigan and Liz McAllister and Dan Berrigan. And what was their first action? Oh my God, was it the King of Prussia action? Well, you know, the Berrigans had early on protested the war in Vietnam and by burning draft files, by going in and taking draft files out of the draft board, taking them in the parking lot and setting them afire with homemade napalm. So in some sense, that could be the first plowshares action. After the war in Vietnam was over, they were kind of looking around for something, and they started to work on the anti-nuclear movement. And they developed a theology of what they call the plowshares movement. The first thing they did was go into a place that made missile warheads in King of Prussia, I believe it's Pennsylvania, and they went into the plant, apparently were able to just walk past the security guards, as many have in these plowshares actions, and they took homemade hammers and started hammering on these warheads that obviously they didn't have nuclear weapons in them at the time. Well, I don't think it would matter anyway. But anyway, so that was their first action. They ground this in the scripture passage from Isaiah about hammering
swords into plowshares. Right.
And so that's what they think of themselves as doing. They started a movement. There's probably been some 150 or so plowshares actions similar to the one in King of Prussia, in which people would break into air bases or nuclear weapon stations or ships and specifically target for the most part nuclear weapons. There was one in Colorado where the nuns went to the Minuteman III site in a cornfield and just started hammering on the hatch of the Minuteman III missile. Those would be things that people have done over the years. I think one memorable one was in the Thames River plowshares, which happened not too long ago, in which activists hammered on a nuclear warship in the Thames River, and they called upon the jury. The jury acquitted them based upon international law. Now, that has not happened in the United States, where people don't believe in international law. But
most judges don't allow that kind of testimony in the court for the jury to hear, do they?
Well, exactly. But I think the climate's a little different in Europe, where they take it a little more seriously.
Oh, yes, right.
Yes. So, plowshares.
Some people, I think, might initially brush back from plowshares because they hear like breaking and entering or hammering or destroying, and they think, how can that be nonviolent?
Right. And so, certainly, first of all, this what we're talking about is an element of degree in which we're hammering on large weapon systems with tiny household hammers. So there is a question of proportionality here.
Right.
And then the other thing is people always stay. They're not running away. They're there to symbolically raise an issue. So yes, damage is caused and deliberately caused to property that plowshares activists would say has no right to exist, that this is property that is protected by law in the most inappropriate way, in the same way that one would say, well, do the gas chambers of Dachau have a right to exist? If you cut the fence around the Dachau prison camp and said, I'm here to free the prisoners of Dachau, and you were arrested for cutting private property. Well, I think ultimately, people, anybody that might have done that would ultimately be canonized, So that's the way I think about it, is that kind of property that's sanctioned by the state, that really is for the causes of death and planetary destruction and human misery, has not a right to exist, and that there's a citizen responsibility to address that and really to break those laws that protect that kind of property.
Suppose somebody, and this will be my last question, and I'll let you go, and I really appreciate your time. Suppose somebody said they read the passage from Isaiah or Micah about beating swords into plowshares, and they liked your analogy about the concentration camps, and they said, I want to do something. What would you say would be their next step?
You could go to the Jonah House website
Okay.
or the Catholic Worker website.
That's your Catholic Worker or the New
No, there
York.
is go to Frank Cordero's website. Well, I don't know what it's called, but look up Frank Cordero and see.
Okay.
He has a really great. There is a Catholic Worker website, and it's really good because it lists all the houses and everything,
Right.
and it probably has some stuff on plowshares. But Frank really focuses in on kind of has a passion for the political aspect of the worker and is a plowshares activist himself. So he would be a good place to go. And then, as I said, Jonah House, and I'm sure if you just Google Jonah House, I don't have it at the tip of my tongue, but you could find it.
Sure, but what kind of spiritual preparation do you think a person should engage in before they head off to do a plowshares action?
Wow, that is I should say you should go to the website first, and then the people who do this would typically engage in a year-long kind of process of discernment that includes discussion, prayer, and scriptural reflection. So there's a lot of work put into it because, it's possible. Many people, typically, people would get one to 3 years in jail for something like this, or they might get nothing. But one has to be prepared, and the first, when the charges are first read, often people are initially facing like 10 to 20 years. As prosecutors can kind of pile things on, particularly in the federal system. So you have to be prepared for that, as well as the possibility of going into a place that is protected by armed guards who are trained to shoot first and ask questions later.
Okay, that's pretty powerful. I think this is a great introduction, and I really appreciate your time.
Great.
And
Well, I hope it's helpful.
I'll let you get back to your work.
Okay, Kevin, great to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
And that was Jeff Dietrich from the Los Angeles Catholic Worker, lacatholicworker.org.